Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, open banking is a very interesting subject, particularly when you look at use cases and the different approaches that countries and organizations take. Now, on this episode, we're going to dive into one particularly interesting use case of bill payment. Now, when it comes to consumer behaviors, we have seen that many consumers have shifted towards using merchant portals for bill payment, but with the acceptance of open banking and better data flow and transfer, financial institutions have the ability to take that market share back and increase their customer satisfaction of their clients and members. So to dive into this topic, I'm joined by Kimberly Hibb, who is the Chief Risk Officer at Bilco, and Sarah Grotta, the Director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of data and insight to unpack on today's episode, so without any further delays, let's start the show. So Kimberly and Sarah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on today's episode, where we're going to be taking a look at open banking and also kind of how that is, it relates to bill payments as well too here. Now, Kimberly, I want to start off today's conversation with you because I think that your organization has some fantastic data, particularly around consumers' kind of perspective or thoughts of bill payment here. And so for those of you who are following along on paymentjournal.com, we're going to have a visual representation of this data in the article below. But Kimberly, perhaps you could unpack this chart for our audience here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ryan. First, I would just like to take a moment to thank Payments Journal and Mercator Advisory Group for the opportunity to discuss the topic. As you know, Bilco is a financial technology service provider, so this subject is very near and dear to our hearts. In 2020, Bilco commissioned a bill pay study from the iTake Group on how Americans pay their bills, and that's what you see in the link in the Payments Journal. Not surprisingly, the study confirmed what many of us knew with respect to the ever-evolving consumer needs and desires as it relates to bill payment services. And, you know, where this ties in is that understanding consumer demand in this space, we believe, is an integral part of the open banking discussion, and more specifically, how a well-developed open banking system can safely and securely meet consumer demands. And so I wanted to start with a few statistics. Some you'll see on the slide, some sort of lead into it. You know, what the study showed is that in 2010, Americans paid just under 14.5 million bills a year. And then last year they paid 15.5 million bills, which is really only an increase of about 7% in the number of bills paid over the decade. But when you take a look back at the overall gross dollar volume, monthly bills cost Americans 29% more in 2020 than they did just a decade earlier. And they paid 41% more credit card bills in 2020 versus what they paid in 2010. And that in gross dollar volume cost Americans nearly $755 billion annually, accounting for $6 out of every $10 on bills in the US. Part of what contributed to this change is the fact that 46% of Americans use credit cards or loans to manage unforeseen expenses. And this tracks to multiple surveys that note in 2019, two-thirds of all millennials were living paycheck to paycheck. And a report issued by the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve last year noted that 37% of U.S. households lacked the cash they needed to cover just a $400 household emergency. And so given the change in bills and the change in consumer bill payment behavior, the survey also noted that when it comes to how, and more accurately, where consumers are currently paying their bills, about 3/4 or 76% of consumers pay their bills online by going directly to each biller's individual website. Whereas just a quarter of those consumer surveys paid all of their bills using their financial institution's online bill payment platform. And when asked if they were satisfied with the status quo, not surprisingly, consumers wanted more convenience, more options, more security. And just under 75% of those consumers are looking for basically a one-stop shop where they can pay all of their bills from a centralized platform. And almost 90% of consumers want more options from their current bank bill payment platform. These include the types of bills that can be paid, the types of payment accounts from which they can make bill payments, and real-time or same-day payments. Most importantly, they also want confirmation that a bill was actually paid. For the most part, consumers who initiate bill payments from their bank's bill payment platform still need to reach out to the biller either by phone, by app, or by website to get confirmation of the payments. And so while you have how they pay and what they pay, consumers are also demanding more options in general, but they're very concerned about the security of their financial information. And this really is especially relevant given the significant data breaches that we've heard over the past several months. And individual biller websites, they can be clunky, and depending on the information security protocols of the biller, could put a consumer's information at risk.
You know, that those are some really interesting statistics, and I think kind of really sort of set the stage for sort of where the bill pay marketplace is. As you mentioned, consumers aren't going to their bank because it doesn't offer all the solutions that they need. And oh, by the way, I think that bankers aren't necessarily promoting their bill pay capabilities. So a lot of consumers don't even know that they can pay their bills through their bank. But then, as you mentioned, on the other side of the coin, where they are going to pay their bills, which is primarily directly through billers, there's plenty of problems there as well. And not the least of which is the security issue, not to mention, you know, how difficult it is to have to go to each and every site and to sign up and to choose a payment type and to put in their credentials to get that paid. Is that really where the concept of open banking is coming together, you think?
I do think that it is. And it's, you know, I love how you succinctly pulled everything. You know, that was the points that I was trying to get across, you know, and it's really a modern bank bill pay experience like the one that Bilko offers. It appeals to consumers who are looking for a centralized, secure, you know, platform with the options that they seek. But it also helps on the other side for financial institutions to regain and retain their customers to their bill pay platform, right? Because oftentimes they're not promoting it or marketing it because it doesn't accomplish what is in the consumer demand. And so using open banking as a tool, right? Everyone thinks of it as a system, but I also think of it as a tool, is one way that it sort of puts all of those pieces together in a very secure manner while providing those options and meeting those consumers' needs.
Yeah, I certainly think that, you know, when we get into the conversation of open banking, it's certainly a very interesting one. But Kimberly, I'd love to get your perspective here of kind of really what is the state of open banking, right? Because obviously it's not just something that, hey, you can flip a switch and it kind of goes on. So where is it you kind of see that the industry is at as it relates to open banking, and then kind of really particularly as it then relates to bill pay?
I think I'd like to start with how consumers and small businesses can benefit from open banking, and sort of that I think will dovetail nicely into where we are here in the state of the union, so to speak, in the U.S. with respect to open banking, you know, because consumers and small businesses can really benefit in a variety of ways. You know, the cornerstone of open banking is the idea that the consumer or the small business is empowered to choose, right? They're empowered to choose with their consent whatever financial services provider they prefer to receive financial products or services. So when consumers and small businesses wish to use those financial products and services that are offered by a third party, you know, such as accounting, lending, bill payment, retirement planning, savings applications, or other types of issues, they provide those entities with access to their financial data. It really is the modern day equivalent to a consumer taking a shoebox filled with receipts and bank statements to the provider of their choosing. In addition to consumer choice, I think it's really, really important to note that a significant number of Americans are not adequately served by traditional financial services industries. You know, consumers who lack an adequate credit history might not be able to take out a traditional loan, but may be able to work with a fintech company using alternative sources of data to better gauge creditworthiness. And so, you know, these tools are not always available to users because the financial institutions, rather than their customers, right now seem to be in control of the user data. And this lack of customer ownership has really resulted in a fragmented environment that limits choice and can stifle financial access and inclusion. And so that said, a key part of this cornerstone is that the consumer or the small business has the right to expect that their financial services provider is properly regulated and meets some minimum security thresholds. Unfortunately, that is not the state of open banking currently in the United States. There's a wide array of opinions or interpretations regarding not only consumers' access to their financial data, but also which laws, regulations, guidance, and industry standards and protocols are applicable to all financial services providers. You know, if you read the comment letter submitted to the CFPB's advance notice of proposed rulemaking for Section 1033 of the Dodd-Frank Act, it's pretty clear how differing financial institution viewpoints are when it comes to a consumer's access to their own financial data. Many are in strong agreement that consumers should have access to their own data, but are uncertain how to move forward. Some financial institutions aren't currently familiar or equipped to provide API access. Others are hesitant to act without a bright green light and very specific guidance from regulators. And then on the far other side are financial institutions that don't really believe that the data belongs to consumers, as well as some who want to charge for access to the data. What a majority of the commenters, and that includes all the financial services providers, trade groups, and consumer protection groups agreed on, is that access should be heavily protected, right? Specifically, that data aggregators should be subject to consumer protection laws and have appropriate information security programs and protocols to protect the data for which they have access. Unfortunately, a lack of formal guidance or regulatory language on this subject has opened the door to interpretation. And not all fintechs and data aggregators are created equal. So like opinion on access, there's a range of interpretations on risk management and compliance program requirements and minimums. Some entities are looking at the defined scope of a regulation instead of the intent. They aren't considering how interrelated financial services and entities are within a product offering from the very beginning to the end. And it's this siloed vision that creates the opportunity for potential consumer harm. And this could be unintentional by a new entrant without experience in the financial services world, or a bad actor whose only priority is profit.
So let me ask you a question, if I may. In the EU, certainly they have sort of all the rules laid out for open banking. Are they starting to see some of the benefits that you spoke of for consumers and businesses since they've been at this for quite a while?
Yeah, Sarah, that's a really good question. What we have seen is that not just the EU, but Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, and others that are embracing a financial data right within their own ecosystems, they are seeing, you know, competition, lower pricing, and a lot of responsible innovation in this area with technology-based tools across their financial markets. You know, and by not recognizing this approach, the United States really risks falling behind as the world leader in digital innovation. So there are really good, strong examples outside of the US that we can learn from and really apply those standards and that concepts, the idea that it is a free market and everything should be working together in order to, again, meet consumers' needs, but do it in a safe and sound manner.
You know, I'm glad that you brought up those, you know, kind of those examples of taking a look at it from a global perspective there, because I think it is important to make note of that. But I do want to circle back to, you know, really what you were talking about a lot there, Kimberly, and that's obviously the regulatory aspect of it. You know, especially when you talk to financial institutions and data, obviously security and regulation, that's always paramount across any discussion that you have here. But, you know, as noted, though, that consumers are looking for access to that. They do recognize, hey, I do want access to this. So with that then being said, you know, how can the financial service industry really meet the demands of, you know, kind of today's modern consumers while still complying with those regulatory requirements?
Thanks, Ryan. That's a really, really good question. I think in a couple of very specific ways. You know, first, become familiar with not only consumer demands, and that can be challenging in and of itself because they stretch across very different constituencies. You know, some who are very comfortable with the status quo and others that continue to want the next best thing. Also understand that consumers are smarter and they continue to self-assess what makes the most sense for them and their financial needs. The pandemic really accelerated this mindset and behavior. But when doing so, you know, don't get trapped by the, quote, just finding a solution thought process, right? Understand that it's a complex environment, not just the technology aspect, but all the different players and modalities are heavily intertwined. So I would say continue to push the envelope, but innovate responsibly. And I understand that what I'm about to say next may not necessarily be a very popular opinion, but I think that entities in this industry need to accept that it is a heavily regulated space, right? Financial services providers should act like they're currently subject to oversight and supervision. Don't get hung up on the scope of a law or regulation. Most of these were written before we could use our cell phones to pay a bill, to check an account balance, or to buy a car, right? And there was no way to anticipate the wonderful innovations in this space when those laws were and regulations were written. So financial services providers should look to the intent of the regs, right? What was the goal? What are they prohibiting, preventing, protecting, promoting, right? And implement bank level information security and consumer protection programs like we did at BillGo. Doing so shows that you understand the value of the data and the need to ensure consumers are protected when they engage your services. It is also an easy differentiator between good participants and bad or ill-informed entities in this space.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me, but at the same time, even if we do have financial institutions who are truly looking at the intent of the law, do we sometimes get into a scenario where we have different interpretations? And I'm thinking about another example in the marketplace, which is as we start to see faster and real-time payments coming into the market, sometimes we see some differentiation in how scenarios are treated by different organizations. Do you think that's the case with open banking?
I think that until, you know, the CFPB comes out with something specific with respect to consumer access, I think that until there are some industry standards that are accepted across the board, there will continue to be interpretation. I think that, you know, your best friend as a financial services provider is your counsel, right? Whether it be internal counsel or external counsel. Someone that is an expert in this area that has worked with a variety of different financial services entities and providers, someone that has their ear to the regulator's doorstep to really get an understanding of what risk you might be accepting depending upon the decisions that you're making in this space. That said, I think that it really is about, from an open banking perspective, I don't think that it is open to interpretation as to what it is. It's just who should have access, when should they have access, and at what level and what authority, and what are the due diligence thresholds that should be there. I think that there's currently a lot of guidance, you know, in this space when it comes to vendors and third-party risk management and a variety of other things that could cross over easily. It's just that it's so new that I think that there is some hesitancy to rely on some guidance that was originally intended for a different purpose, even though it should be repurposed, if that makes sense.
Now, Kimberly, before we wrap things up here, I know that BillGo is a member of the Financial Data and Technology Association of North America, but I'm curious then to maybe get a little bit of an inside track here of what it is that BillGo is looking to accomplish being a member of that organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the foundation and the purpose behind BillGo is to give everyone access to financial services in a secure, real-time manner. So both on its own and as a member of FData, one of BillGo's key goals when it comes to open banking and consumers' access to their financial data is really to be active participants in the ongoing regulatory discussions, right? Our role, in addition to being good stewards and participants within the financial services industry, is to provide information to the financial organizations we serve, you know, legislators who are considering new or changing existing laws, regulators with oversight and consumer protection authority, and consumer groups whose concern rightly is pushing the consumer's agenda while simultaneously minding privacy concerns. As a former federal regulator, I understand how invaluable it is to hear from all the stakeholders when drafting guidance or regulation. Understanding unintended consequences of prohibiting X behavior, does that somehow create an equally or less desirable behavior? You know, also, how will compliance be assessed or even enforced? As the chief risk officer for BillGo, I want to be proactive in this process and demonstrate our commitment to information security and consumer privacy and protection. You know, as we discussed earlier, it really just takes one bad actor and the infliction of consumer harm to initiate a knee-jerk reaction that may seem to address the concerns, but really doesn't. And so by being part of the conversation, providing information and very candid answers to their questions, BillGo and FData can assist in the development of laws, regs, and guidance that continue to protect consumers, meet their needs, but doesn't stifle responsible innovation.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that, Kimberly. Really appreciate it. So with that being said, Kimberly, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about open banking and also bill payments and Bill Go as well, too. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thanks. We're happy to be here.
Yep. Thanks, Ryan.